Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is Force Center, a show about Star Wars, pop culture, and the ultimate adventure, life itself. There's a lot of adventures of life within this episode of Star Wars. Excited to discuss. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
And I'm Ken Napsok.
And I'm Jennifer Lando.
And this is the Bad Batch Report.
I wanted to get back to music today.
Yeah, it's good. It was good music. It was. I feel like that was almost like some MIDI recording from Legend of Zelda video game in the late 80s that captured the mood and vibe of Pabu.
Yep, you just bartered for a sword. You got it.
We got it.
You got it.
Yeah, we got a lot in this episode. We are thrilled and excited to discuss it. It is season 3, episode 9, The Harbinger, directed by Stuart Lee, written by Jennifer Corbett, story editor, listed every episode, Matt Machenovitz. I want to dive right into overall reactions. This is the episode that everybody has been waiting for since the trailer that revealed the return of Asajj Ventress. So there's a lot to process in terms of this is an Asajj episode, but it's also continuing big time the story of Omega and the Bad Batch. So, Jennifer, what was your overall reaction to this episode? Did you love it? Did you like it? Did you struggle with it? Were there expectations met or dashed?
I liked it. Overall, I really liked it. I was surprised by how much Ventress was featured. Like, it was her episode, which was not what I had anticipated. I thought maybe she'd be kind of like, you know, a stop or a few scenes. But the fact that they really just, the whole episode is about her was shocking and exciting for what's to come.
I really agree. It feels like... Asajj is such a potent spice to add to a dish. It's like, we'll move out of the way because the whole dish is going to have that great Asajj flavor if you add even a drop of her. So why not? And yeah, I thought it worked really, really well. Ken, what was your overall reaction?
That was it. I'm like that guy at the party. He's like, oh yeah, what do you put in your mac and cheese? I got jalapenos. I put jalapenos in there. I loved it. She's finally here, and I really enjoyed how they used her. And we're going to talk about that. I think there was a clear thematic and story purpose for her being there. I never doubted that. But I love when you just kind of sit back and go, yeah, they did what they felt was right for all the characters in this episode. And I think it was even better, or maybe I should say was a more specific use of her than Luke and Grogu, which I think is a great example of, hey, who would answer this call? Luke would answer this call. Mm-hmm. Who would be there to relate to Omega on a lot of things? It's Ventress. And it was, she brought with her a clear indication, dare I say, a harbinger of things to come. I love when titles have those meanings. We love digging into
that. Things that can't be avoided. It was fun.
Yeah.
No, I really enjoyed it on multiple levels. I was kind of waiting for the Asajj episode, prepared for it to maybe be less Asajj, or she's a bump in the path. But this was so perfectly used on just kind of a fun surface level of spending quality time with the character and on the deeper level. I never want to underestimate how much of Bad Batch I love is just a great hang show of like, I'd like to hang out with these characters and I like that the plot is moving forward and that they're going through things, but I would just watch them, go watch a Holo and eat Mantel Mex and comment at the screen Riff Track style because I like the characters. And Ventress, I got so much out of the depth of it, but also just like I love where she's at, that she is this goth with a big heart who's been through hell, and this is how she expresses herself visually, emotionally, with like lots of snark and lots of give me my space, lots of don't F with me. But everything she is doing is showing such a big heart, like that moment of stop smiling, it's unsettling. Yeah. Like, I've been that person. I know a lot of people who've been that. Of like, I'm a gushy, lovable, kind person, but my whole surface is metal, rings, eyeshadow, leave me alone. And I just love that getting to spend time with that classic part of the Ventress character and then also see how she's changed.
Yeah, absolutely. Jen, I've learned so much on the building of Ventress's character from your excellent Jedi beat. we'll drop that link. It was fun to just kind of see Tank Girl really return in true form in this episode.
Yes, the underwater scene where we really get a close-up of the Mohawk. I thought it just felt like a wonderful extension of the character that we met and learned all about in the Clone Wars.
Yeah, and with the diving under the water, at least three different hairstyles. So that's at least three different Asajj Ventress action figures that we can potentially get.
Yeah,
Ken?
My final overall note is, and I was wondering, Jen, if you're feeling this too, because I love this episode, but there was especially the first viewing, which I watched at midnight, which I haven't done yet this season, right? I watched it on my phone in the dark, like I was a kid in junior high sneaking in a baseball game on the transistor radio before you sleep. And there was, I'll describe it as a slight letdown, meaning I was like, oh, okay. Slash fighting, big answer. Like I know there was an expectation for maybe bigger, not just lore dump, but a bigger piece in the puzzle that we're putting together here. So that my initial viewing had that like, I can't wait to think and stew on this episode because I really liked it, but not what I expected right up the top. And I think some other folks, I was looking at some reviews, all loved it, but had that same vibe. And Jen, there was a little, a 2% room for any kind of like, not love energy coming from you. I was curious. I was going to kick it back to you.
I could tell you're a good improviser because you picked up on my cues. I really liked it. There's so many great things about the episode. I loved seeing the character. I loved the relationship between Omega and Ventress. But there was kind of something where I wanted a little bit more. I don't know how to describe it. Where it did it didn't leave room. Like, there's a huge bantha in the room, as my former editor at StarWars.com said, Dan Brooks. And the bantha is, how the heck did she end up here, right? We can have our theories, and I'm sure we'll talk about that more. I would have liked just a little bit more of a glimpse of that. Like, she drops right in, and we get right to the story. Hmm. So I kind of struggled with that a bit. Mm. She's been absent, and we know what has happened to her in the books, or in the book. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think I had got myself to the place where the more I thought about it, the more I thought, like, how are they going to sort of shoehorn in a character who is, even at her most emotionally connective, which I think she is in this episode, is still, like, not a super sharer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
Right.
Yes. Right.
So how is she going to, you know, have a snarky, bantery interaction with the Bad Batch and spill something as intimate as I died for the man I loved and the energy of my planets told me I was not done and I found myself alive again or whatever it is. Whatever happened to her is very intimate and personal. Mm-hmm. So I think I was imagining, like, unless we get like a 3-episode Asajj arc, how are we going to get her to that level of emotional truth where she might share? Mm-hmm. So I think I had started to really brace for myself and for any other fans to just not get the answer on how she returned here. And I think if I had been hoping for that, I think I would have been affected. Does that make sense to you, Jennifer?
Yeah, I think it was more like, and this wouldn't really work story-wise, is to meet her in her territory. So we do get a little bit of knowing what has been happening, where has she been, what is she up to. And instead, we met on their territory, so we really don't know anything. Like, the curtain is pulled up, right? And I think just at the end, obviously, about the lives, more lives to live, that's obviously a nod. But I don't know, I just kind of would have, or maybe like meet on a neutral ground, just to give us a clue of what has she been up to, right? What is her world like? I think is interesting. But I don't think it would have worked story-wise, so...
Yeah, yeah, I mean, I like. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Ken.
No. Continue. Yeah, I'm picking up.
I was going to say, I agree. I think that they can try, but I've got a few lives left. Feels like the elegant version of somehow Palpatine returned. In acknowledgement of, we don't know the how yet. So let's focus on the emotions and the why. But it does, I think, serve a kind of similar purpose of like. Later.
Yeah.
On that answer. And I can understand anybody who is hungry for more.
Yeah. And when we get to the canon section, no doubt we'll talk about this even more. But yeah, that's why I was curious, Janet. Like, that's why I use the word letdown, but that's not even accurate once I woke up, right? It was, I wasn't even expecting just her story. I think sometimes I was hungry for more answers. And you get a lot of it there when you slow down and pay attention to their conversations. For me, I'm saying when that was a second viewing thing. And there was some, and shout out to our buddy Alex Damon for pointing out, there was a little bit of, for those who read the book, you could describe it as a lack of tension, which are the words Alex used that I agree with, on, well, we know, I'd love, so the yellow lightsaber comes out, well, that's not a surprise. The fact that she's there and alive is a surprise. We want to know. And so it's just, being punished for almost having too much knowledge of her. Versus someone who's just like, oh, the Clone Wars. Oh, that's great. She's here. I wonder if they had a different view of it. That's the only thing I carried into the second viewing, which was gone by the end of it, I think.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk about it more as we get into the big ideas. But I think the thing that I was affected by is I almost always kind of want a little bit more plot-wise because I enjoy the show. And I'm just am anxious for the story. So it's not really criticism, but it's a truth that I'm always like, almost every time the credits hit, I'm like, awesome. Aww. So there's always a little bit of kind of a desire for more that isn't a letdown, but a lean forward for me.
Better way to say it, because there when the ship flew off and there was a beat where I'm like, credits, really? That's not a negative feeling, right? That's not a criticism. That's just a, oh, okay. Versus, you know, one of my only big critiques of Andor was that one episode where like the episode ends with Andor going, huh, all right. Let me credits roll. Like I was like, no, don't do that. Don't do that. Keep going. One more beat. It was in that ballpark, but exactly what you're describing of like, it's a lean forward, but it's like a, huh? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that they're aware of that, right? Like, I mean, I think that's why they put out that StarWars.com statement is because it does leave you with that feeling of, okay, it's over. Well, yeah. Right. So it's like, we don't worry, fans. More is coming. This is just a wetter appetite, the appetizer before the real big meal. So,
yeah, Ken, do you want to read that statement? Because I didn't have a chance to read this in the interview, right?
Yeah, Dan Brooks sat down with Nika Futterman, and they also pulled in a quote from Jennifer Corbett. And I'll start with the going back. To the where it is there. So Ventress is one of our all-time favorite characters, Brad Rao says. So when Dave brought up the idea of bringing her into the Bad Batch, we were beyond excited. Jennifer adds, we had several discussions about the book, Dark Disciple, and how her story could continue. How she survived will be revealed in future content, but for this story, we were thrilled to include her and explore her unique connection to and compassion for Omega, which I think they absolutely nailed. So, yeah, there it is. Just kind of getting ahead of it in a way that I don't think Lucasfilm has done well in the past.
Mm-hmm. Of saying, I think this is the right way to do it. This vocal of a fandom that, yeah, my only that's a glowing, wonderful statement. My only complaint is the word content. I wish they'd say storytelling instead. But that's that's a quibble for another day. Last big picture thing I wanted to say, and then we can kind of get into some big picture ideas, is I think I was so surprised in that it was such a big Ventress episode, not just in terms of screen time, but I felt like it was it did advance Omega. I think it compared and contrast Ventress to the Batch. So Omega and Bad Batch were present, but I felt this was an episode about we don't get to know literally how she survived or if she's with Quinlan or is she bounty hunting or what. We don't know those nitty gritty details, but I feel like so much of the episode was showing us, yes, she has changed and she wants to change, that this is a tour of her soul, that it wasn't quite, you know, Gandalf the White sort of resurrected and changed, but more like, I don't, Ventress the Dark Purple, but it was so, so much of the soul of the episode was about what happened to her, not from any sort of practical perspective, but from a totally emotional perspective, that I think it would have bothered me if she was just sort of like, I'm bounty hunting and I have secrets and you'll find out later. The fact that that what the Bad Batch always does so well to me is like, maybe it can be a little slow on plot, but it's always there for the poetry.
Yeah.
And everything about this was much like what's happening on Jennifer's screen was about caring between one character and another. Some of this reminded me even of like Rise of Skywalker. It was so much about reclaiming your soul. And that really, really spoke to me in her journey. So let's dive into big ideas at stake in this episode. Jennifer, what resonated to you in this episode?
I did like feeling like she was this mentor, almost like mother, maternal figure in some sense. A very nurturing, I wouldn't say, but there was some level of care, which was interesting to see from this character. And her also kind of coming in and telling them, hey, guys, she's going to have to leave you at some point, and you got to be ready for that. That was an interesting wrinkle for the Bad Batch, which I guess they haven't really thought about too much. And she was just a badass as well. That was very exciting to see. But the ideas, I guess, mentor relationship. That's the main one that stuck out for me.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that. I think for me, the part of her journey that I thought was so present was that I think she was in that sort of maternal creepy goth aunt with a big heart, absolutely looking out for Omega, you know, in trying to have Omega avoid some of the trauma that she Ventress has gone through. So I feel like so much of this one of the big ideas in this episode to me was about moving away from trauma. Like Bad Batch has always been about change of here's these clones who are only know how to be soldiers and the entire galaxy changes and they find out they were pawns and all that. But this is an episode that really went straight at the PTSD element of it, because it wasn't just about change. It was about Ventress, I think, proving that she gets to choose who she is. You know, the way that she acknowledges that, you call me a war criminal, but we were all pawns in the same war and we all lost. in everything about this journey, and her empathy for Omega, I think, is trying to show that maybe there's darkness in her, in her past, certainly, but that isn't who she is. And like all of that beautiful visual poetry that Bad Batch show always does so well is so strong here with, you know, Batcher's animal instinct fear of her, meeting her in a dark cave of dissent. You know, when she senses there's going to be violence, that that the Batch doesn't trust her. This poor woman grew up around constant violence, and she makes up this incredibly cute game that is all about going toward the light of go to the top of the beautiful island and pick a white blossom because creepy goth aunt and, you know, overprotective dads have to have some violence in the dark cave. And Asajj's whole life was violence in the dark cave. Go get the white blossom and step away from it. You know, all building to that idea of, you know, when she reaches out, does she summon the beast or does she calm the beast in making those choices? That healing journey for her was just so poetic to me, and lots of images of light and darkness and up and down to literally support that. So great. What are your big picture thoughts?
Yeah, I love it. Love what you're saying. The going down to the dark depths of the water to pull her, all that stuff. A couple quotes jump out, kind of based on what you're both talking about here. But Ventress, that line towards the end, I am many things, but I'm not your enemy. Of this being multifaceted, number one, that's just a great general life thought there too. But just, you know, her claiming her identity, combining that with Omega saying, please, no one's been able to give me answers. I need to know what I am. Such a just a topic, thesis statement, sentence, paragraph starter for me when that quote came up. And that feeds for me into you know, intentions versus actions. I thought about the idea of it's not trust and change, it's trust in change. And especially that's a big Crosshair thing going on right now. There's a lot of connections to Crosshair adventures in a weird way. And I love this idea of Crosshair is struggling with this big sea change that's happened, but he's still trying to define himself too. Can he move beyond his training, his life, his existence up to now and be something else while also retaining who he is, which is, I think, part of what Ventress's journey is all about as well. And I put the idea of a season of change is coming for Omega. We know that's pretty clear. And there's just so much. It's this parenthood journey that this show's been on, this family journey. You know, Jen, you might need to watch this episode in 3-4 years when you got kids ready to head on out. You know, or beat themselves this time. And if I shouted out Alex Damon, I got to shout out Molly Damon, who I saw post as well, this great thing of this is a Ventress is kind of the first to really directly refer to the Batch in terms of it was not a direct quote, but just the Batch as distractions for Omega is something we haven't dealt with before. And you got them, even at one point, there was a moment with Crosshair going, you know, when they're wondering, hey, we got to find out the M count. Well, what does it matter? Because we're not going to turn her over, which is a good intention. But it's such a statement on the M count represents who Omega is. And Crosshair's reaction is, it doesn't matter who she is. We're still going to protect her, which is a great thought. But man, that could be restrictive to Omega's journey. And a lot of that all flowing into the main topic for me, too.
Yeah. Jennifer, were you affected by that idea of Omega possibly having to move on?
I felt really bad for her. She's longing to find her identity, who she really is, where she belongs, which is complicated because she belongs with the Bad Batch, right? Mm-hmm. In her mind. But she also knows that there's perhaps something greater for her, a greater destiny, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And I think... Yeah, I was like, oh man, they got to let her go. They're holding her back. They're holding her back.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I mean, and it makes you think about all the other parents who had to let their force sensitive children go to train before. But yeah, it is. That is going to be how this series ends. I'm sure them making peace with letting her go to fulfill her destiny.
Yeah, I love. Yes, I pitch it back to you, Joseph. I love that. That was kind of this big, like we got the big story plot lore stuff we want to find out. We're gonna, you know, we finally heard midichlorians. We know this is a series that's been about clone agency and clone identity, but this seemed like a point of pointing towards the end of her purpose versus their purpose and how that will change. I thought it was a great moment.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And when we get to canon, I definitely want to talk more just about the real specific, like, spinoff and to show, like, what the actual, you know, what is actually going on here. But in terms of, like, the thematic ideas, I agree with, I can't remember how you phrased it, Ken. We often have similar ideas phrased slightly differently. I thought there was a lot in this episode that was people being very aware of their labels, of which is a part of their identity, but continually going back to that Star Wars idea of your choices defined you, not your labels. There's a lot of talk of literal past lives. I think this whole episode is really defined by both Ventress and the Bad Batch are choosing to be caregivers. They didn't get to choose who they were in the war. They were pawns and clones and soldiers and war criminals. Now they get to choose to be caregivers. The plot really functions on moving forward because Omega continues to choose to trust, to help, and and to inspire. In that great moment with Crosshair of like, well, I believed in you, so I say we give her a chance. It's so much about choice. She's not defining people. The Batch is tempted to define Asajj by her literal record, what's written down, and Omega's insisting on, no, let's see what she actually does. And Omega follows up of like, I watched what you chose. You chose not to leave me, and therefore I trust who you are. I think Asajj makes that big point of your blood doesn't even, maybe force sensitivity is going to affect who you are up to a point, but a Jedi, your blood doesn't make you a Jedi. You'd have to be trained for that. Is another real reinforcement of this idea of choice. I think Asajj is also really accepting that clones can be different. I really like her moment of, I've never known a clone to be force sensitive, but clearly none of you are normal, you know, and then telling Omega, you're a strange clone.
I love that. And Omega's thanks.
So bright. So all these ideas of we're aware of all of our labels and they affect us, but we're all the characters are continually checking in with one another, what one another actually does and what one another actually wants. Which leads to the moment that you both brought up that I really want to talk about is Omega is she's upbeat, she's positive, she's got a can-do attitude, and then suddenly she's a little bit of a pouty preteen about Jedi training. Of this isn't easy, I can't do this. Like, why do you got me out here on this boat? And I think it hinges on these issues of identity and her connection to Bad Batch because. Asajj kind of tries to push her. They're like, your overprotective shadows got you thinking inside a box. And Omega gets real defensive of, I'm trained. Like, she wanted to be a member of the squad since the beginning of the show. And she's been trained up by all of them. And now she's getting attached to this identity. And then here comes this other person into her life who says, maybe you have an option for a different identity. Jennifer, how do you feel about Omega maybe being tempted to hold herself back because she already decided, like, I'm a soldier. This is my squad and I'm locked in. And now here somebody else comes and says, maybe you want something else.
I see it as like a child prodigy who is very good at one thing. And then you try and have them do something new that doesn't come easily to them, that they don't even really understand. I thought that was a really interesting point where Ventress says something about, like, you know, let go of your conscious mind or whatever. And she's like, what's that? Like, she doesn't know. Why kids don't know that means, right? Like, I thought that was just such a great moment that felt very real. And it's why she can't let go. She doesn't even know what she's letting go. It's such a strange concept. It's why they take them when they're so young, because they can mold them. And not Omega is young, but she still has already formed this identity. She has a sense of pride with what she knows. And here comes somebody trying to say, you don't know anything. You have to learn, unlearn what you've learned. And that's just really unsettling for Omega. And naturally
I think that's a great way to look at it. That's the way that I really felt of, like, you have mastered, you know, whatever it is. You're a master chef. Now I need you to learn Photoshop. And like, I don't want to go back to being a person who doesn't know things, you know?
It sounds dangerously close to you're a chef, but you need to master online content and build your brand. That's what you're talking about. I love what you said, Jen. First of all, Chiari Mundi and the others would be like, absolutely too old. Absolutely not. Mm-hmm. Absolutely not. Are you cold? Do you miss your Bad Batch friends? But I love seeing this, in an era where we've also got Grogu, and I don't mean it's like repeating stories, they're on their own journeys, but I love exploring this mythical become a Jedi warrior monk journey we've all been familiar with for a very long time, now being not challenged in a negative way, but challenged to go out even inside the box you're talking about, Joseph, of like, yeah, she is old. She does have this identity. This whole series up to now has been a lot of family bonding and found family that's been key all the way through. But hey, change still comes after that, just like Grogu. You know what? You've got some choices too, because you're which clan are you part of, and which direction do you want to go? And it's up to you to maybe decide this here. So I love exploring this in a modern Star Wars era of the different paths to perhaps force sensitivity. Big question hanging over it, whether Asajj is withholding information or just telling lies about certain parts. We'll get into that, I'm sure. But I love this kind of new way to look at it for me.
Yeah, no, I think it's. I think the empathy from Asajj is expressed in a really interesting way, but I think it's entirely there. She's trying, I think, to give Asajj, Asajj is trying to give Omega good training and clear ideas of what it means to be a Jedi. And Asajj and her backstory got some of that from Kyn Erich, but then it ended badly with violence and all that. And I'm sure she wanted it more. So it feels like Asajj throughout the episode is just like, I want to help this kid, but is it more helpful to open up her eyes and set her on this Jedi path, or is it putting her more in danger and kind of wrestling with, what do I think is best for this kid? Because I want to give it to her, whatever is best is what I took. Mm-hmm. How did you feel, Ken, about what Asajj was trying to give to Omega? What did you also feel like she was trying to care for her and find the right way?
Yeah, and finding, you talk about a cool goth aunt, but also parenting themes come in here to play that I am unaware of, unless you're talking about raising my PS4s into a PS5. But I got to imagine, and Jen, you can tell me if it's not. But, with Omega, it's like, I don't know myself. I wrote even my notes. I don't know what part is is true from Ventress and what part might be a lie. We're playing, four truths and a lie here with Ventress and Omega, but I think she's torn. I think that moment where Ventress or where Omega is like, I need to know what I am, which speaks to a title and who you are as well. But that's Ventress's entire life, right? And her entire life was trying to find out who she was. And the embrace with Mother Talzin is like going home again, but that doesn't stay. And then she's abandoned, and her and Ahsoka work together because they're both abandoned by the orders and the people they had put so much trust in and thought they were being defined by. So there's a lot of like, I'd love to give you that energy. And I think Omega even says that. You like us. You like us. Don't you lie. There's that energy, but also you can't ignore the pain, right? Don't put your hand in that socket is a lesson for a reason from parent to child. And if I can keep you from that socket and lie and tell you there ain't no socket, maybe that can help. And I sense Ventress, that's my parent examples. That's all I got.
Yeah. Well, Jennifer, what are your parenting thoughts? How do you think Asajj is doing in her attempt to briefly parent Omega?
I thought that she did a nice job. I think that she ultimately is trying to protect her because she sees the conflict in both Omega and in the Bad Batch crew. And she knows what a difficult path it will be if she says, yes, she's, her MCAL's really high. She's going to be a great Jedi with some training, right? Because that will cause a lot of pain for both Omega and the Bad Batch. Mm-hmm. And I think she's just like, you guys don't open Pandora's box. So I'm just not, I'm just going to withhold that information. We're just going to pretend like this didn't happen. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think it's actually kind of her in a way to feel like she's protecting both of them or all of them, I should say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I felt the same way. Maybe Asajj is flying off to go like, hey, Quinlan, I need your help with the kid, because I think so much of this episode is also about Asajj seems, she always seems confident, right? But we kind of know what she's been through. And even if you don't, you get that. She's a war criminal who felt like, I know I did awful things during the war, really, really awful, horrific things. And it was all pointless. And I obviously have the power to take this kid and do whatever I want. I mean, we'll talk about the awesome action scene, but it was really like, Asajj is unstoppable. She can come to this island and do any damn thing she wants in this scenario. And so even if you don't know her traumatic past, you know that you're watching somebody who has done horrible things and is trying to help or at least not harm. So to me, so much of the episode becomes about Omega keeps trusting people. That's her instinct. And is she right this time? And I think a lot of us already have a relationship with Asajj and have read Dark Disciple and expect her to be sort of resurrected as, you know, on this next step of revolution, are really rooting for her. But I think really seeing it through Omega's eyes of her dads are frightened of this, you know, warrior who took him apart. So much of the tension ends up being in that moment where Asajj demonstrates the force. And at first it looks like real pro Omega stuff, beautiful glowing fish. And I love the way that shot where her hand just sort of becomes a fist and it almost feels like Asajj doesn't even know she's doing it. And that discussion of calling, did you summon that beast? And not intentionally. I think it's a really great moment of that idea that is in lots of places in Star Wars, of that the darkness is always there, particularly for somebody like her who's been through trauma, has PTSD. But it's not a yes or no answer. Are you on the dark side or are you on the light side? Can we trust her? Can we not? Can she trust herself? Can she not? That moment is totally about, I can't help that there's darkness in me. I can't help that when I reach out to everything, what answers is a furious beast that I've enraged by touching it with my mind. But I choose how I respond to it. And you know, the calming of it is, it was just so beautiful. It's the part of Bad Batch I love the most. It's just, it's so, like we say every week, you can break it down intellectually, but you just feel it emotionally. The hopes that Omega is right about Asajj, that Asajj can change and make her own choices. And it's just such a beautiful moment of her saying, I can't control that every once in a while the darkness is going to spill out of me. I can choose how I respond to it. I can fight the beast, I can encourage the beast, or I can calm the beast. And that's who I am. And I decided that, not Count Dooku, not, you know, some pirate warlord. I decided that. That's who I really am. You weren't wrong to trust me, Omega.
Look, you're preaching so good, I'm going to buy you the God Bless the USA Bible that's currently for sale. I had put a note that, oh, I enjoyed this little sub lesson. But as you speak, I'm like, oh, I meant the lesson. Because you said it, Ventress is, you know, as Katie Lucas helped evolve her into, a badass that's almost indestructible. Though we've seen her hurt, we've seen her defeated, we've seen all those things in her life. But in this episode, Wrecker might say, oh, we're just getting warmed up. But, Asajj didn't break a sweat during that fight. They did. And in the moment where she summons what I call the space sea turtle monster, I think it has a real name or something like that. I don't know. I don't look it up yet. That moment. And then after the rescue, there's a little beat where Asajj is in the chair, the third or fourth wet hairstyle's there, and her shoulders are slumped, and she's kind of – the great animation as always. There's kind of this of it was a little – not weakness, but vulnerability of not being in fully control, even when she sometimes thinks she is. And I think that leads to everything you're talking about of this – you know, this, she just speaks beautifully of this – you know, connection to nature. And remember, Omega's pretty much always connected to nature. She taught Crosshair how to do meditation, which she learned from Gungi, who is very much attracted and attached to nature. It's beautiful. And then all of a sudden, Mouth Monster shows up. And ain't that the thing, man? Ain't that life? And this contrasts nicely with Dark Disciple stuff, with that monster underwater. Right, which is on Dathomir, and she teaches Quinlan how to destroy it, how to kill it, because that's how she was raised by these witches. I'm not criticizing the witches; I'm just saying it was part of the lesson. Right, tap into the dark side, dominate, control, whatever you know. And here she is, realizing the best way is to not go towards the darkness. It's to stop it in a way. And the Bad Batch, God bless them. It's almost comical. They're shooting this turtle monster, and it's nothing. Nothing will save them except for this decision from Ventress. So, yeah, sub lesson. Yeah, the lesson.
Yeah, I know. I think it's the vulnerability is. There's so much great stuff to pay attention to in that one bit of animation where she's kind of slumped and Crosshair's processing, and Omega goes, "Well, that was fun."
Yeah,
yeah. There's so much going on there, but I really felt it because I think a lot of us have felt that vulnerability of like, mm-hmm. we all want people to think we're good and we mean well. And sometimes you have those moments where you've lost patience and like maybe other people don't, where the darkness flashes in your eyes and like, mm-hmm. I want you to believe when I reach my hand out, the glowing squigglies come.
Yeah.
Not the eat your face tentacles. Did you see my eat your face tentacles side of me? That's very vulnerable. I'm so sorry.
No one likes mouth monsters.
Yeah.
No
yeah.
one.
And I did like that Crosshair is the one who vocally doubted her the most. And I did like that mm-hmm. there's that moment. It's not overplayed, but there's no – he doesn't have his arms crossed as she jumps on the ship. He reaches his hand out for her and lifts her up and brings her into the living room,
yep.
the spaceship living room. Yeah. Yep. Jennifer, how did you feel about that whole section of Asajj trying to show Omega how to use the Force in summoning something beastly?
I totally did not see it the way you saw it, which I'm glad that you share what you share, because I'm like Ken, I'm like, oh, I see. That's the point. I was like, here we go again. Another beast. No.
It's a risk.
Beast with tentacles.
There's a lot of beasts. There's a lot of beasts out there.
Bad Batch is a real beasty show. Yeah. A real tentacly beasty show. Yeah. Yeah. So it is a distraction.
So I'm glad that you shed that light on it, because I mean, I did like the little creatures first. I'm like, oh, this is a great thing. And then I'm like, here we go again. No, but now it all makes sense.
Here we go again on my I'll take
what I thought initially, and I'll rewatch the scene.
Okay. I just love that Jennifer's like, yeah, like, goddamn mouth monster showed up and I was
it's really hard because my kids are on spring break, as some of you may have already seen who are watching on YouTube. And so I watched it twice, but I'm trying to watch it while watching them. Yeah. And so when the monster came, I'm like, okay, I have a moment to kind of be distracted and handle the business with the kids. I totally missed it. That's like a really important lesson. The irony of that.
No, I understand. You're busy. It does absolutely affect how and when we watch it. So I have been out of town at the beach with my wife and her mom for my wife's birthday. There's been parts of the vacation that were wonderful and relaxing, and I'm lucky. But then I had a lot of work, so I have in the last couple of days been like, we're here. We're playing a board game. It's the beach. I got to bleep and get this done. And like, and I think I've been in that headspace where like, don't let my poor wife and my mother-in-law see that. Got to get this bleep done monster.
Mm.
Time to relax and enjoy the squigglies. And I watched this at midnight then like, got up and got a glass of whiskey and went out on the balcony and listened to the dark waves crash and thought about it. That's a different experience to have than in terms of watching it, you know?
Yeah. No, first of all, you're living well at that moment, Joseph. That's a great moment. Jed, look, I think the world will see what you've done here today. You've done good work on all fronts.
One other big idea I want to talk about that we've all talked about is, I think, Ken, you made a great joke about it. The title's not subtle, the harbinger, the literal definition, a person or thing that announces or signals the approach of another, or, you know, change in general. There's a lot of sense of foreboding throughout this, of like the characters emotionally are getting on their feet, both Bad Batch and Ventress. But, you know, the Bad Batch can't stand up to Ventress at all. It's just like, it ain't happening, you know? Ventress warns them they can't handle the Empire. You know, the Empire is more dangerous than you can possibly fathom, she says. She knows Omega being gifted makes her a target. She knows Pabu is not safe. She's watched the trailer too. screenshots that an invasion's coming to Pabu.
Have you seen the breakdown? You're in trouble.
Yes. Have you seen Alex and Molly Damon's breakdown? They spotted something. They freeze framed Pabu.
Run.
Jennifer, how did you feel about just so much of that sense of danger is coming, and there's only so much you can do about it?
Yeah, I kept asking myself, how many more episodes do we have of the show, right? That kind of makes me know, like, whereabouts we are going in this arc. I also, after reading the StarWars.com interview, I was like, oh, we're like literally getting a taste of what's to come in the future. This is like just a little glimpse. And it's interesting to me that Dave Filoni is the one that was like, we're going to bring her back. Put her in this episode, because that means he's got something that he's cooking up. We don't know what, obviously, Tales of the Jedi, who knows what. But yeah, that was definitely on my mind throughout the entire episode, is why is she here? Why now? Where is this headed? How many more episodes do we have left?
Yeah. Ken, were you...
Six episodes left? Yeah.
Six episodes left?
Is that right?
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Wow.
Speeding up. Ken, how are you affected by that title, that idea that, oh man, it's great to see your old friend Asajj, but she's basically just come here to tell the Bad Batch,
look,
this island's done for. You're going to lose your kid. Yeah. You can't send up to the Empire. Have a good day. Bye.
Look, yeah, no, I always admit, I want to make sure a word that I've not only known my whole life, but have used, a harbinger of things to come. But even I, Joe, can say that in a dark, disturbing voice. So I looked it up. I was like, I want to make sure I know what this word is before I go on a show and talk about it. You know, if Force Center is a newspaper, you both are the think piece, opinion pieces. I'm the funny papers in the back. And I wanted to, it means both, right? It's not necessarily dark clouds. It's not necessarily good clouds. It's not unlike Mouth Monster of the Sea showing up. Mm. It could go many directions, and it's definitely, there's dark. And plus, you know, anytime as Grace passed by this morning, she was like, that's the sexiest voice I've ever heard. It's anytime Ventress talks, it's got a little bit of danger to it. And she's saying things that should be considered not dangerous from her, but danger to come. Mm-hmm. But you know, this thing with Omega, it's Star Wars at its core. It's George going, I'm going to give you a story on the cusp of adulthood. All these good things could be in front of you. All these bad things could be in front of you. This story is a harbinger of things to come. What can you learn from it? And what choices can you make while you navigate it? You, Bad Batch, have to make some decisions because you're not as safe as you think you are. Doesn't mean you can't find safety, but it might not be here, even though you think you found it. And you, Omega, have found yourself, but you've got to go forward. And it could be destructive, it could be hurtful, you can end up a bounty hunter like me, if that's what she is. I have some thoughts and questions about that. Or you could, maybe you become a Jedi and you save the galaxy. Who knows? You have to go forward. You have to face it. This episode to me is a big sea change moment. It is the fork in the road, like the Muppet movie, and literal fork in the road, and you got to go left, you got to go right. And that's how I kind of view her as a harbinger. And I love that when that title popped up, I was like, oh man, okay. I think this is going to be it, and this is going to be interesting.
Yeah, no, I see your fork in the road. I think it's a good analogy. I will also say, I think Asajj's message in summary was keep on trucking, because Hunter's got himself to this point of I acknowledge that we need to look at the problem, not run from it. And he's obsessed with finding out the answer to the M count.
Right.
And Asajj is kind of delivering him the message that, you got a part of the answer and the rest of it's only going to get more complicated. So you have to keep facing things rather than avoiding them.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Yeah. There's I love that this will come up in the canon without a doubt, but just, I was even texting some pals this morning, just like, I kind of love that to those big questions, M count, we got the use of midichlorian, what's Palpatine doing with it? Does this go to Exegol? There's all these questions that I want answers for too, but it's almost like Asajj was saying, I don't know, maybe, for sure. Nah, I don't know. Like, it was just wonderful to be like, that's not the point, the journey, we'll get those answers. We got to move forward.
Yeah. Who does Omega want to be? Well, any other big picture thoughts before we take a quick break, and then we'll discuss all the canon stuff in the future and the 8 Asajj spinoffs that I hope we get.
No, I think from my point, I've said mouth monster one too many times.
Well, we're not done saying it. We're going to take a quick break, and then there's going to be more a green mouth oozing mouth monster in just a moment. Back in a moment.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with Plush Care. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
And we're back, and none of us have green stuff oozing out of our mouths like that weird sea creature did, which I really enjoy. Looked like he ate the slime from Nickelodeon.
I think to me that indicated he ate some of those beautiful squigglies
that we saw. Good point. Which produced the slime that Nickelodeon used. It's all connected.
Yeah, it's all connected.
We love discussing canon and lore, connection to other stories, and this is where we also kind of discuss some of the future predictions, what's going to happen. Let's start with the big reveal. She finally said it. A lot of us have been yelling at the screen with the M-count stuff. Just say midichlorian, you coward. You know who's not a coward? Asajj Ventress. She's the one who finally said midichlorian. She said, it's something in the blood. Everyone has it, but at varying levels, those with a high count were believed to be more capable of wielding the force. And I just wanted to start by checking in on that. That is phrased in a very specific way to me that it absolutely agrees with everything Qui-Gon ever said about them in The Phantom Menace. We're also in this post-Sabine world where we're really aware of, yep, midichlorians are in everyone, and even people with an extremely low midichlorian count can still access the force. Everybody can access it to different levels. Jennifer, how did you feel about the way that Asajj talked about midichlorians?
I really liked it. I felt like it was the clearest explanation. To me, it really connected with the idea that George Lucas had, what he has said since then. I don't know about recently, but since the prequels. And I liked it. I think it's consistent with what we've been seeing in this new quote unquote Disney era. And I also forgot that the Bad Batch didn't really know what the M count was. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, that's right. They're not Star Wars fans. They have no idea what M count means. And they're like, what is it? What does this thing mean?
Yeah.
So I thought that was a funny moment for me as a fan. But yeah, I really liked it. But you're right. It was very careful. It was very careful.
And you're right that it was very clear. It was like she could have been more insulting. She did say it slowly, like she was speaking to a small child. Yeah, yeah. She could have been even more insulting about it. Yeah. We talked a lot in the earlier episodes about Rex having a reaction to M count, mm-hmm. like he was familiar with it. So, and they've made a deal the last couple episodes of like, well, we're expecting to hear from Rex and Echo again. So, mm-hmm. I'm almost wondering if the next episode's going to end with Rex and Echo showing up, like, all right, we figured it out, and like, we got it, you know, and awesome. Yeah. An awesome witch visited us. We got it. Okay. Ken, how did you feel about the way that Asajj talked about midichlorians and the way she phrased everything in a post-Sabine Star Wars world?
Yeah, post-punks, post-Sabine world. I really loved it, but I also want to pause and go back to October 2012 and tell yourself that the word midichlorians will be said again on a Star Wars animated program by Asajj Ventress, who did die but is back and is speaking to clones, one of them that may or may not be a actual brother of Boba Fett. Just put that out there to yourself. And I say that in a wonderful, wonderful way. Like this is why I love the ongoing adventures of Star Wars. And yeah, we've been wanting this word for a while. We got it. And I it's a direct answer and it connects with everything. It connects to what Yoda said. Jen, you're so right. It's not only George quotes, it's Yoda quotes. And I think it's almost like, you know, Hunter, I'm glad Hunter and Wrecker and Crosshair weren't our generation making fun of it in 2000, right? Or questioning why science was brought into the mythical thing. It's wonderful to hear it. It's wonderful to hear it explained and dealt with in this way. And I don't know the answer. And I don't even know what, in terms of what Omega is, I should say. I don't know how much I want her to be force sensitive. I don't know how much I want this to be about that yet, but we're here and I've got to let go of that and move forward too.
Yeah. Yeah. One other thought about the Asajj's actual line, and then I want to dive into is Omega mm-hmm. force sensitive or not. I really like that the way she phrased the not as facts. You know, the Jedi seem to often say, like, here's the deal. Here's what midichlorians are. Yeah. But she said those with a high count were believed to be more capable. We're believed are like two great little words, because she's got her ups and downs there with the old Jedi and, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. resenting them and fighting them. That order is no more. And even though that, you know, she, you know, was never an official member of the Jedi Order. She was trained by Kyneric, then fell to the dark side, manipulated by the Sith. But she's been around the philosophy a lot. She knows the philosophy of the Jedi. So I like that it's a past tense thing. And that's what the Order believed. She's not even saying that's the truth or that's what I believed. She's saying back in the old days, the Jedi Order believed it meant that those with a higher count were more capable of wielding the Force. But maybe there's more to it than that. I'd like the wiggle room in what does Asajj think?
It's a lot of wiggle room. Yeah.
Yeah. So let's get into the is Omega Force sensitive or not? Jennifer, how did you feel about... Is Ventress hedging her bets? Is she trying to protect Omega? Does she want to train Omega? What vibe did you get off of Asajj?
Off of Asajj, I think protecting her, and that she's not really ready yet. Mm. Right? She's not. She, like you're saying, she was kind of like the whiny tween, if you so to speak. I'm tired. I need a snack. Like, I don't want to do this. This rock is slippery. Right. So I think that she knows the journey that she would have to take in order to train. And she knows she's not ready. But I think it's like she might be, I don't want to say leaving the door open, but you know, I think that she'd be okay with that if Omega decides on her own. And the Bad Badge crew is okay with it. To let her go. Mm-hmm. It's twofold. And that's the challenge. But at first I was like, oh, I guess Omega's not force sensitive. I don't know why it's negative face value. And then I was like, oh, second time.
Crosshair didn't, right? I mean, because I did the same roller coaster of like, oh, well, this is an interesting twist, all this. And then Crosshair's like, you're lying. That's really interesting.
Right. Yeah,
Where did you go with Asajj's vibe?
Right. I'm right with you both. And it was more than even just first and second viewing. That helps. It was just who do I believe? Because it's not the overall big proclamation of, nah, you probably aren't from Ventress. It's what I feel of there's a little moment with her kind of saying, you know, I'm not quoting here, but just like, I'm not seeing it. But then it's like, do I believe her or do I believe Crosshair? Because I believe him when he says, you're lying. I believe that moment. And that might be the answer. You know, that might be the answer.
Yeah, I think that's what I was saying. I didn't know to say it that way. Like, I trust Crosshair. I know I believe him that Asajj is lying.
Yeah.
There's that one shot. It's really a short shot, and she kind of goes out of focus as we see the Bad Batch coming to kind of confront her for being a war criminal. That she's really watching Omega have her foot up, and there's that beautiful bit of ambiguity of like, is she starting to feel like, yeah, this kid's going to be really hard to train, but I'm seeing something.
Yeah.
In that shot, I kind of felt like,
Yeah.
I keep making jokes about a backdoor pilot, but I felt like Ventress said so many times about Omega's future training and future possibility of training. Hunter says to her, what do you want with Omega? And Asajj says, maybe I'll take her off your hands, which just reads as just a jibe at the time. But then when she's trying to train Omega, she says this is different than being a soldier. Even if you have force potential, they can't show you how to tap into it. You know, really talking about you got to separate from your dads. And then she says directly to her dads, if Omega did have that potential, she'd have to be trained, which would mean leaving you behind. Up to three mentions in, you know, a 25-minute, however long this episode was, about not just that is she force sensitive or not, but she needs to be trained. She needs to be trained. She needs to leave you to be trained by me. So that just felt like, you know, maybe the path of this show is the Bad Batch sacrifices themselves or retires, or one of them lives on. And, you know, Crosshair lives in a hut whittling toothpicks while Asajj trains Omega. Ken, how do you feel about that potential that the Bad Batch sort of twilights, but Omega goes on with Ventress in some form?
I 100% went there in that direction in this moment. I do have to remind myself that I don't say kids show that's true about this show, or but that's the only way to look at it. But I still think you have a kid at the center of it. And do you want to have in Star Wars? Well, now I'm saying it. Look at Luke in New Hope. It's not the first time. I get it. Just like, do you want her to have to watch the death of them? Go through the Kanan moment that we had experienced. I don't know if they would do that, but maybe they would. But I keep going that direction. Someone's got to die. Sound like Lawrence Kasdan on Han Solo in 83. And that's what the feeling I had coming out of this. Not even saying that as a prediction, just this feeling of your story's here, your fight's here, talking to the Bad Batch. You aren't safe here. She might have something bigger. And she might have, no matter what, she might have a path that you three overprotective shadows are going to have to come to terms with.
Yeah.
And, that takes me to dark endings with rays of sunshine poking through.
Jennifer, how would you feel about that? Or do you think that's even a possibility of some sort of continuing storytelling where Omega's story goes on with Asajj?
It's interesting because if there was no Tales of the Jedi, I would say that this was 100% a backdoor pilot episode. But because of the Tales of the Jedi, I'm like, are they going to have Asajj Ventress in that as well as this other series? I mean, I think it makes sense for them to continue a new series with Omega. She's such a beloved character. There's so much story to tell. There's so many different ways you can connect her to the bigger picture. It would be great, right? But that I do worry about that. I'm like you were saying before, she's a spice. Ventress is a spice. And it's like with garlic, right? Remember that the restaurant, The Stinking Rose, where they use garlic in everything? They closed down. My point is, if you use too much of it, you know, it's a lot. And I went on X, formerly known as Twitter, and my feed was like, Ventress, love it. So the audience is there. The audience would love to do that. Maybe they'll give us what we want.
Yeah. And maybe, you know, we keep talking about streaming is in such a moment of transition too. I really agree with you both that, especially since they clarified in the interview that Dave Filoni did the somehow Ventress returned, figured it out to Brad and Jennifer. that I totally believe that Tales of the Jedi will focus on Asajj and where Quinlan's at, and if Asajj and Quinlan are involved with the path. And those all sound like great Tales of the Jedi story. It just feels so much like Omega and Ventress are heading toward being together, even if it wasn't a spinoff, that might be the sort of the looking to the horizon moment at the end of this story of Hunter and Wrecker and Crosshair and Tech and Echo's journey is all, that's all settled, but the future goes on. And here's Omega looking to the future with Asajj, even if it isn't a show, it's just the, like, we leave off here. Who knows?
Yeah. It comes down to ask myself what I want. And there's some resistance on my part to just go with the Omega is force sensitive. But even if it is the case and that goes somewhere, this episode gives me confidence. And I never had lack of confidence, but just like, yeah, that it would be handled in a way that I think would be fulfilling and interesting going forward in this timeline, this era, where I think at the beginning of the series, I think I had a little bit of relief. Like, the force is there, but it not key to this series. It's key to everything, but it's different for me. So I think I have to, like, I'm coming to terms with, all right, this episode. I think when Ventress says, like, she's not. I was like, see everybody? No. I needed Crosshair to tell me she's lying.
Yeah, and maybe it still will be not maybe a thing. But I feel like this episode, like as I said before, I do feel like because we're lucky enough to get a lot of Star Wars storytelling, there's some kind of beats where I feel like we're starting to see them a lot. Personally, as a fan, would like a 5-year moratorium on abdomen wounds, because that's just like a thing we've seen a lot. You know, there's that absolutely cool lightsaber move of it's right up to the helmet, and we saw that in Last Jedi, and then we saw that again in Ahsoka. We only saw it twice, but I'm like, for me, when, you know, Omega is reaching out and trying to connect, they're like, we've seen this beat a lot. So for me, it's like, what's almost like the use of the beasts of like, what's in this beat? Because and for me, I had that moment of sort of tightening up at we've seen this a lot. But then it was, I just didn't think about it at all, because this is so much about who Omega is. And that the episode, I didn't find myself thinking about, like, you know, what color will Omega's lightsaber be? You know, how high, like, I didn't think of any of that kind of stuff. I just thought about who Omega is and what would it mean to her. And for me, like, the storytelling then is successful, because it isn't just about, in the next trading card game, is she going to have Jedi powers instead of soldier powers? It wasn't at all about that sort of ranking. It was to me about, what choice is Omega going to make and why? Who does she want to be? As other people have talked about, the power of maybe the end of the clone story is they can be anything. No clone has ever been force sensitive, but Omega is. Clones can be anything. Like, of it is working for me.
Yeah, that would fit. That would fit. I'm with you on the same beat thing too. I think that's when it started. I had a little bit of that resistance to it. I agree with you. I don't even know if I mean that in a fully negative way. It's just like, we do have much more storytelling out there. I didn't use the word content. Much more storytelling out there that, you know, you're going to have those moments, and, you know, it isn't as easy as yelling down the hall, because they're not all working in the same offices.
Right. No.
That's not the thing. But yeah, I wouldn't mind a little bit of that. But I'm not going to do fan art of Omega in clone armor with a lightsaber next to Grogu and say, oh, I can't wait for this. Like, and God bless people that do. But I'm looking at the journey for Omega here.
Yeah, the who she is. Yeah, the other sort of canon thing I wanted to ask you both about is, so this is the era of the Empire where Asajj is very clear about even asking around about M count is dangerous. Yes. You know, to have any level of force sensitivity is a death sentence from the Sith, who she knows well. And yet her whole thing isn't like, she is force sensitive, she needs to be hidden, or she needs to be taught how to, you know, not, you know,
right,
present. Her whole thing is, well, if she has that power, she has to be trained. Why do you think Asajj is coming at it from that perspective? Because she could just come at it as, yeah, she's force sensitive and she should not develop that power. She should hide it. You should hide her. Instead, she's saying she should be trained. Is that because Asajj herself you know, was trained later in life by Kynaric. Why in this era does Asajj, you know, insist that she has to be trained? Any thoughts on that, Jennifer?
That's a great question. My natural instinct would be that Omega does have a high M count and she needs to be trained, because if she's not, not that she would use it for bad, but she's got to understand her power and know how to use it for good, right? Otherwise, it may come out at the wrong moment in a fit of anger, right? She might do something that she ultimately regrets or that hurts other people. So that's where I was like, oh, she is lying, as Crosshair said. Yeah. So yeah, that was my instinct on why she would want her to train.
That's a great perspective. Yeah, because in Asajj's backstory, when her master Kynaric is killed, she unleashes and the Dooku gets his claws in her and all that. Well, so her saying like, yep, it's not so much that, yeah, you have a responsibility to use this power, but like you could go off in the wrong way and you need help and guidance to make sure that doesn't happen to you the way it happened to me is really interesting. Ken?
Two lines, one paraphrasing, but the you know, we both were pawns. All of us were pawns in the war. That means, Darth Sidious and Darth Tyrannus were behind it all, because I was there helping them. I was there with Dooku helping them. And then the Empire is more dangerous than you could possibly fathom. Again, not only does that speak to just the, general oppression and fascism on the rise in the galaxy at this time, this speaks to the old man behind the curtain. And tying it to what you're saying what both of you are saying, Joseph, what you're asking, and Jen, what you're thinking of. Again, probably is, probably isn't. I'd love to maybe suggest she, it's a dangerous path. But I think, she has to be trained how to wield it, because not only could she do bad, but there's other people out there I know that could unleash her on the galaxy. And that ain't a good thing from Ventress's point of view. I think Ventress has ownership of who she is or who she was and is reconciled with it to point, but she knows what she did. She knows all the bad things that she was a part of, and I wonder if that's part of it too. Of, I lost my way because of circumstances and the people around me. That shouldn't happen with her if she's truly that powerful in this time.
Yeah, that's really great. The idea of like, when you reach out, I want only squigglies to come, not mouth monsters that you didn't mean to summon.
mouth monsters are going to show up, but like.
Yep.
That's life. But I mean, to the actual canon and the era, like you're asking, like the Empire is more dangerous than you could possibly fathom. It's because old Sheev is sitting there with gnarled fingers going, power, unlimited power. Like, and it's beyond what you can even imagine.
Mm-hmm. The only other canon thing I wrote down was, I love that we've been tracking all the great tech shout outs. And Crosshair says, I checked text files from a public archive to find out that who Asajj Ventress is, confirm their suspicions. I continue to appreciate that they're keeping Tech's presence alive by mentioning him more episodes than not in believable ways. How are we feeling about the Tech of this all? Jennifer, are you wanting a Tech twist, or does it feel like he's just being honored and we're moving on?
Every episode, I'm like, on Tech Watch, is he going to come back? Just keep waiting for him to show up. And now I just feel a little silly, because as of now, it doesn't really look like he's going to come back. But I'm still on Tech Watch. But I do like, because there is a big hole where he was. And we certainly, it is also more realistic that they would mention him, right? That he was... he is greatly missed. So
I don't feel you should feel silly at all, Jen. I think I'm still on some sort of Tech Watch, whether it's some hopeful version or Joseph Scrimshaw's dark version that he's broken many hearts on in the past. But I think with each mention of him, it makes me think that it's less and less of a chance, that it's truly an homage. It's truly a tip of the cap to the hole in this group, because I think there's a good chance Tech would have been like, midichlorians are, because I looked at And it's felt. And so the fact that they keep acknowledging it to me no longer feels, or less each week, less and less feels like foreshadowing. It feels like remember the guy that it hurts to think about, and because it's so sad. Like, that's the way it's playing for me.
Yeah, I love that. You know, most importantly, his emotional absence is felt, but also his skill set absence.
Yes.
Because they're so based on that. And I think, yeah, Tech would have been like, I have rigged up a Razer Schick tester device for midi-chlorians.
Yeah.
If there is no Tech twist coming, I hope that he's honored in the, you know, finale. You know, mm-hmm. I don't think it's mm-hmm. going to be anything like, and now we've erected a statue on Pabu and Tech is there too. But like, I hope that there's something to honor him. Any other canon thoughts?
Yeah, the big one, we dressed it, but, you know, Ventress and her, quote, extra lives. I really didn't expect anything more than that. I whether I want it or not, this is what I felt, you know, we weren't. Well, actually, no, let me take it back. I thought maybe there'd be some explanation. I thought, I don't know. I don't know what I thought. But I like where we're ending up with her just kind of, yeah, don't worry. Re-up your Disney Plus subscription because the answer's coming soon type of thing. I really like that. I think it works for Ventress. She's cagey, man. She's not going to be telling people. None of your business. How about that? So it leads me to wonder.
Yeah, I thought if Quinlan is also in the episode, maybe there's a possibility because he seems mm-hmm. more chatty. Jennifer, do you think Asajj is going to be in Bad Batch more? Like, we're all on the same page of like Tales of the Jedi makes a lot of sense. But do you feel like this is her appearance, or do you feel like she's going to be back later in the season?
I think she's going to be back towards the end of this season. I don't know. Just, I was really surprised by how she was the episode, how she looked. She looked in good health considering what she's been through. So that was kind of surprising to me. I'm like, oh, she's definitely going to be back in a big way. And I think, makes sense for her to come back for Bad Batch.
Yeah.
Take Omega to her training, off into the sunset.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm kind of feeling if there is indeed, like, everything kind of leads to, we got to shut Mount Tantus down. That's the only way for clones. Not just rescue our brothers. That place needs to end.
Yeah.
That there could be I can see, you know, Rex and Echo being like, if only we had more help. Wrecker being like, a witch gets our asses. Let's call her. You know?
Yeah.
Get the cavalry.
With her in that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What are your thoughts, Ken?
I definitely, like, Jen, I'd be with you. I think I am with you in a way of she'll come back, especially with what we're talking about, the possible path in front of Omega, and maybe even the path in front of Omega. But the interview, the official acknowledgement, not Nico Futterman at a convention now, but now in an actual StarWars.com article, and Brad and Jennifer commenting on the situation and saying, there's other things coming, but we needed Ventress fit for this moment and fit for the relationship to Omega. It just makes me feel that they're finally getting ahead of it, like we said at up top of this episode, of this is what you got now. But don't worry, more's on the way.
Mm, yeah, I'm excited. Excited for more Ventress and for some of those answers. We always like to talk about favorite moments as well as the big ideas. We could be talking about action moments, comedy moments, heartbreaking drama, just great shots, whatever we want to talk about. Ken, what are some moments for you?
That fight alone, we could break down all the little moments just highlighting that. But I just put Ventress kicking ass, like, cool. I did love, I almost thought about doing it at the top of the show for my stupid sounds, but Wrecker had a couple great args all the way through it as he was getting his butt beat.
Yeah, that fight was phenomenal. There are a couple times in Bad Batch where it kind of almost feels like the animation team gets together and is like, everybody knows we're at the next level, but should we remind them again that we can go to the next level? Should we just throw in some extra underwater shots that look beautiful and would have been impossible, you know, several years ago? The speed of that fight, the accuracy of that fight, it's great storytelling, but just in terms of animation, it's like show-stopping. Jennifer, mm-hmm. how did you feel about that big fight?
I had so many things that I wrote down. So the fight alone was great because it reminded me of, I just saw Roadhouse with Jake Gyllenhaal and there's a lot of fight sequences just like that, the hand-to-hand combat. And so it was kind of funny seeing like, oh, that looks like what Jake Gyllenhaal just did. Even down to the knife and everything. But yeah, I just loved it. It was exciting. It was cinematic, as I always talk about. And it just was, I didn't know who to root for. I was like, yes, she's kicking their butts. Wait a minute, they're my guys. She can't kick their butts. Maybe just a little bit to teach them a lesson. So it was just really fun.
Yeah. No, it would have been an entirely different fight if they really were like totally opposed fighting to the death, right?
Right. Mm. Right. Yes, exactly.
I love the way it's structured that she's just like, I know I'm not going to be able to talk these guys down. They know who I am. They're, you know, we love all these characters. So I think it's easy to forget, like, she slaughtered, you know, thousands, millions, you know, and certainly took out many, many clones. And they're like, she's a high priority, absolutely dangerous. She, I love how much she knows they're not going to back down. And it's a great move to just gone with the blasters. Mm-hmm. And then I'm just going to teach you a lesson. Like, and some of her hits are pretty nasty. You know, the elbow to Wrecker's head. Pretty nasty.
Yeah.
But it is so much just of like, I'm just going to settle you down. You got some rowdy energy. I know can't contain. Auntie Asajj has got to settle you down, you know?
Sit down, fool. Sit down. Yeah.
Yeah. Ken, were there any other specific beats in that you you liked?
Just a lot of the flippity flops, a lot of some UFC, MMA submission holds. Like they were just drawn in from a lot of different fight sources. I think he's my guy, but every time Wrecker tried to get up and she took out his legs and fell, and I think that's why I liked it so much. It was pretty funny.
He does his Wrecker, it's clobbering time move with the two fists. Together, like, not gonna help you, dude. When she returns the knife and clearly uses some force on it, that great sound design where when it hits the ground and it's much larger than it should be, you know, from her doing the force throw of it, that was also cool. Other moments for you, Jennifer, that you particularly enjoyed?
I just loved her with Omega. It was just funny because Crosshair, as we talked about in previous episodes, brought a lot of comedic moments. And she did the same. As you guys mentioned, you're an odd little clone. Thanks. Stop smiling. It's unsettling. It just was really funny because it's so truthful and authentic to her character, you know, but that's why there's such memorable lines. It's because it's just like, of course she would say that. Of course she'd be unsettled by Omega, a little happy Omega, excited to be on this adventure, right? That was just so great. And one last thing I want to say is the texture on Asajj Ventress's the fabric, like her collar.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. They really, the animation team, outstanding.
Yeah, it is really amazing.
Yeah, I mean, cosplayers are revving up their engines right now today, right?
Exactly.
Ken, what were some moments for you?
Yeah, well, you mentioned sound design. There's always so many great moments in this series and all the Star Wars series with the sound design. But that the sea monster, the mouth monster, whatever you want to call it, whatever it actually is called, there's a moment where the tentacles are up and Sasha's trying to get the boat away, and there's a shot of Omega looking up and there's this like horrendous like it was epic. And even if I too have a little bit of it, all right, another monster, what can we learn from this monster, it pushed past all that in that moment for me. It was as Jen would say, a cinematic moment. I think a lot of that just related to the sound design in that moment there.
I think for me on the beast, like I agree, like, there's a lot of beasts in Star Wars and in Bad Batch. So me, it's always like, how is it used and is there something different? And I like some different things about it. I love the squiggly snake-like pupils. Was a cool design. The green mouth ooze that you rightly point out is like, oh, that was probably the nice creatures.
Probably
the squigglies. What are you going to do? So a lot of cool design stuff, but the shot when the way it's shot is one of my favorite moments, when Asajj and the beast see each other, when Asajj opens her eyes and the snake pupils widen and it we've seen other shots of Jedi like calming beasts. We've seen Grogu in the Rancor, and you know, Ezra really reaching out to go, I'm cool, you're cool, we're both cool, everything's cool. You know, Ahsoka kind of asking for help from the Purrgil.
Mm-hmm.
This really felt like, do you see me? I see you. Are you a sea monster who can also calm down? I'm a sea monster who can also calm down. Like, yeah. It was so beautifully done to be like, we see each other. And then that, I didn't notice it until I watched the second time when we pull back to this wide profile shot. There's this energy ripple that of green that goes through the monster's shell. It's just a really beautiful touch that I really appreciated.
Yeah. I'm with you on that. With you.
Ken, did you have some Ventress comedy moments that spoke to you?
Yeah, she's that's one of her not quite hidden skills, but one of her overlooked skills at times. You know, her saying "How fun for me" when they're staying to watch. I love all that. There's that one look she gives Omega, where she's looking at the cameras, like looking up at her. It was great, and you know, the one I think a lot of people mentioned the looking up at Crosshair, throwing Crosshair's own skills back at him of just assuming you're being watched, and I love that. That stuff too. Yes, you mentioned it. Both of you mentioned it, but stop smiling. It's unsettling. I've heard that in my own house. I know that feeling. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The look up through at them through the binocs, and Wrecker's noise is perhaps one of the best Wrecker noises ever. I'm like, oh, he's so unnerved by her. It's so great.
He almost did a and ran away.
The line from the trailer we all know of, I wasn't planning on killing you, but you're making it very tempting. It is a great Asajj line. Yeah. And then Wrecker's response, if we're good like that, is like, is that track is a cool guy line, Wrecker?
Yeah. It's got some
good you guys mentioned as well, just great Omega delivery of conscious mind. I don't even know what that means. So good. So good.
Yeah.
Any other moments for you, Ken?
No, I do the record across there in the beginning of, look, you made a new friend. Just, you know, Crosshair's growing slowly.
Making some friends on the island of Pabu for now. Jennifer, any other moments for you?
No, I think that was it. I mean, just there were so many great moments that I got to watch it a third time to catch it all.
Final one I wanted to mention is just, I think, a great shot and a great moment for Asajj. You know, we're introduced to her in such an unsettling way where Batcher, who, Ken, you've been saying, pay attention to the doggy, right? Mm-hmm. Shot after shot in episodes, Batcher is aware of a problem. So It's extremely creepy when he's like, there's something wrong in the cavern. We've got this like, the Batcher's animal senses sense something horrible emanating from Asajj, right? So we've got the like, we're scared of her. There's that shot before she faces off with the Bad Batch where they're in the darkness of the cavern and a shaft of light is illuminating Asajj. And it's like this moment saying, Asajj knows exactly what's going on, that they're responding to the old ways to fear. They're going to fight. She can't stop them. And she's enlightened of like, I'm not using my lightsaber. I'm not cutting their heads off. I'm going to disarm them and punch them a bit. And she even says, think carefully. How do you want this to go? She's a shockingly Jedi. It's kind of an old school Ventress badass line. But it's also shockingly Jedi-like because she's the one standing there in the light. And our heroes, the Bad Batch, are in the darkness. They're like, think carefully. How do you want this to go? It's a badass line that's also like, that's such a badass line that means, what's the point of fighting? Why do you want to do this? What are you going to get out of it? You know? I thought that beat was great and the visual was phenomenal.
No, absolutely. An episode truly of light and dark all the way through. Love it.
Yeah. Was there anything, Jennifer, that you disliked your question besides, what we talked about with wanting more Asajj resurrection clarity?
Yeah, no, that was really the only thing that kind of I was waiting for. Which we did get at the end, some sort of acknowledgement of why she's back, how she's alive. Okay. Mm-hmm. It was also interesting because in contrast to Omega, her skin, which, I mean, that's like the way her skin looked, but she did kind of look like she had been risen from the dead. It was an interesting mm-hmm. style choice.
Yeah.
I'll mute myself now.
Ken, was there anything you disliked your question?
No. I think, you know, we 6 episodes left. We got a lot to pack in. A lot of the questions that we want answered, sometimes they're questions we're asking and maybe not the show, all that kind of stuff. So that's why going back to my original feeling, I think in the end they used this character right. They used this episode right. I think this is a powerful episode. It might be one of my favorite of season 3 so far. But I had a little bit of that, like, oh, let's go. I don't use that phrase because I hate when people say let's go in tweets and everything. But I was just like, let's go. I want to get to the finish line, but I want to cherish every second. So that's not a problem, just a question of like, all right, where are they taking this and how fast are these six episodes going to move now?
Yeah, I think I was in the same place because I really was like, one more scene, please, before the credits cut. And I realized, you know, it was not a criticism. I do feel like some of the episodes since the advent of Disney Plus in both Star Wars shows and Marvel shows, I feel like it's not even about length. I feel like that's not a complete meal onto itself. And even a serialized story, I think, should feel like a complete meal. Mm-hmm. And I realized that's not what was bothering me with this one or other Bad Batch episodes. Like, that's a complete idea into itself. I'm just so invested in the story. Yes. I'm left wanting more of like, you fed me a whole 3 tacos. I was just really hoping for a 4th taco because I want more, you know?
More? Yeah, I agree.
More. Ken, anything that we have not talked about that you wanted to touch on in this big episode?
We got to all the spots. I think the one little thing, I don't remember seeing this ship with Asajj before, right? I don't remember if it's new or if it's her. I can't remember.
I know her ship that she had in the Clone Wars. I saw a ship that she was supposed to have in future. I'm not confident in what's going on with this ship, so I look forward to the explainer videos. But it was cool looking.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I'm always concerned about ships. Do you have enough room, left leg room? Like, I love the N1 coming back, but the Din can't travel in comfort in that one. That's not the Vanagon that was the Razor Crest. So I like her ship and the design and vaguely B-wing adjacent with a long blade-like wing. So I loved all that.
Yeah, that armor pressing into him, cramped in that little cockpit. I mean, like, there should be a 5-minute segment in every episode of The Mandalorian where he has to just get out and stretch before he starts fighting again.
As he gets older. I mean, come on.
Yeah, come on. Jennifer, anything that we haven't talked about that you wanted to touch on for this episode?
No, I wish that there was a behind-the-scenes featurette like they did with the Clone Wars various seasons where we can see like how are they designing the ship and how are they designing what, you know, how she's going to look and blah, 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 and all the story beats and seeing the writer's room. And I want to see Dave Filoni coming in. I have an idea. We're bringing Ventress back. We're never going to see that. Never going to see that.
Actors do historical reenactments of George walking down the hall and telling Dave, just bring them all back somehow. And then Dave doing it to the Bad Batch team. And like, this is how it goes. The cycle continues.
Yeah. You know, as Dave walked down the hall, he just yelled over his shoulder. It's like poetry. It rhymes. You know, he did that.
He did. He absolutely did. Well, we always like to end on a fun question about merch. If you could have a figure or merch of any character from this episode, who or what do you want, Ken?
Look, we're all going to say there's so many new Ventress figures to come out of this episode and her return. So you all could take that too, put that on the shelf. I don't take a lot of baths. I'm not a bath guy. I'm not a bath guy, but we have a lot of bath bombs in the house. So I want a Mouth Monster bath bomb that I can buy, Grace, the little green squigglies. Lush can sell the Star Wars licensed bath bombs based off the creatures in the oceans.
Yeah.
I like that. Yeah.
That's great. Yeah. No, I can't wait for a Ventress figure. I hope it is announced very soon in Jedi sort of training fatigues or exactly how they're going to describe what her outfit is. It's great. And I agree. I would like some Sea Beast merch, like something where you squeeze it. This would work. We could have the same product, Ken. And those pupils expand when you squeeze it, and it gets better understanding.
So we got the squiggly bath bombs, and you've got a bath toy to make bath time fun. I got it.
Just like Asajj, like I want to reach out and see if the natural world picks up on my mood. And that Sea toy goes, brr, brr, brr. Jennifer, what merch would you like from this episode?
There is a meditation Barbie where you press her, like there's like a little button and she does like meditations, like take a deep breath. I want an Omega version of that meditating. You press a little button on Omega's necklace or whatever, and she can just calm you down.
Oh, that's
wonderful.
God. Yeah. We all need to relax.
Exactly. Yeah, just do, hey, Lucasfilm could do like a guided meditation with Omega. That's what they should do on their YouTube channel. Get on it.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, man, that'd be great.
There you go. Mm-hmm.
Fabulous. All right. That is our big look at the return of Asajj Ventress. We can't wait for more returning of Asajj Ventress. Ken, you want to take us home?
I do. She's here. She's here. She's back. More to come. We are the Force Center Podcast. We're available as a podcast, not a spot. Just search. You'll find us. Oh, I switched it up. We're also on Twitter and Threads. I still call it Twitter. You can call it what you want. We're on Twitter and Threads, Instagram at Force Center Pod. We're also on Facebook at Force Center Podcast. Also, merch is still available at tpublic.com/user/Force Center. I say still available because you never know what gets taken down these days. You never know. Uncle Bob doesn't like that font being used. I know it's not Bob. And don't forget, you can support us directly if you'd like at patreon.com/Force Center. In April, our second episode of 007 Center will be on the way as we look at Quantum of Solace. The Casino Royale one is up. It's also available in our Patreon shop if you want to check it out. Don't forget to also check out that YouTube channel and subscribe and like and all the stuff over there, because there is a wonderful, wonderful episode with Katie Lucas done by Jennifer that's on there. Jedi Beat, diving into Asajj Ventress, but mostly the life and times of Katie Lucas in Star Wars. It's wonderful, and it's a perfect time to catch up with it there. You can follow me at Ken Napsok or go to my website, kennapsok.com, for upcoming comedy shows, including next week. Complicated Force Center recording schedule we'll have to talk about, but I will be flying to Boston and doing a show on April 3rd with Justine Marino and Mark Ellis, and then on Saturday with Mark Ellis at the Rockwell. Ticket information on my website. Jen, where can they find you?
You can find me on all the social media sites at Jennifer Landa, TikTok at Jennifer Landa 1138.
All right, Joseph, take us home with you, sir.
Yeah, welcome to our future bonus episode, Scheduling of the Force. Someday we'll do that where we're actually schedule live on air. It'll be great. We should say we do have, speaking of live, we have a live stream this Friday, right?
Oh, yeah, we do. I forgot that, too. Yes, it's Friday.
I messed up our schedule this week. Friday, I almost said January. Friday, March 29th, 2 p.m. Pacific, we're doing a live stream, and I'm sure we'll be talking much more about Bad Batch and Asajj and Omega's future and all that great stuff. And anything else you want to talk about, you can also ask us about MTV Unplugged, which we just talked about a lot on a recent episode, along with Qui-Gon. We should have talked about what Qui-Gon's favorite episode of MTV Unplugged would be. That's Maybe right. We can do that on our live stream. Again, that's Friday, March 29th, 2 p.m. Pacific. For myself, you can find me on all the social media at Joseph Scrimshaw. You can check out my blog, Finish Your Monsters, by just Googling my name and Finish Your Monsters. But that is it. Go collect your white blossoms at the top of the island. This has been the Bad Batch Report.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter.
Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There's stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like worried of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.